Welcome to Madlit Musings, the podcast where we dive into the minds of authors, exploring the profound realms of faith, social issues, and the delightful world of entertainment. I'm your host, Jamie Jill Wright, and on this literary journey, you never quite know what you're going to get. Hey there, Madlit enthusiasts. Our podcast is sponsored by the esteemed Baker Publishing Group. Whether you're into heartwarming romance, gripping suspense, or deep dives into matters of faith and society, Baker Publishing Group has it all. With Revell and Bethany House Publishers under their umbrella, they bring you a diverse array of books that will captivate your mind and stir your soul. Check out all of their line at www.bakerbookhouse.com. Hello, everyone. It is Jamie Jill Wright here at Madlit Musings. And today I have our repeat guest and one of my favorites, Miss Patricia Bradley. How are you today?
I'm good. This is one of my favorite places to visit.
Oh, we always have so much fun talking and the conversations go all over the place. So that's usually the best when they can do that. So, but today
I'm ADHD, so, yeah. You know, squirrel.
Yeah, squirrels. I have squirrels and rabbits constantly in my conversations. So it's totally fine. And people, I don't think, listen to my podcast for sense and sensibility. It's more like chaos and crazy or something. I'm not sure what the adjectives would be.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, fun. But we are... What's that?
I said, and where were we?
I don't know. I don't know. I think we're talking about one of your books coming out.
February 6th. I do know that.
February 6th. Wonderful. We have Fatal Witness coming out, which is book number 2 in your Pearl River series. And I distinctly remember reading or chatting with you about the first one, which was Counterattack, correct? And that was the one that was all about chess, the game of chess.
And the dark web. And
yes, that's right. That's when I found out you have a secret life on the dark web.
Yeah. Well, I took a course in it.
I know you did.
Oh, man. I keep thinking I'm going to go over there and see what's over there for real. I mean, I did it on the course, but it was kind of anyway.
Yeah. That would be an interesting place to visit, a little bit frightening. And, you know, it's funny, and we don't need to get off on that rabbit trail, but since we're talking about it, I'm always like, there's a part of my mind that's like, how do you even get on the dark web? Oh, it's easy?
Yeah, you download the Tor browser, which stands for the Onion router.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Look at this.
You download it on a USB drive.
Well, you're good to go. Go from there. You heard it here first. Everyone, Madlit Musings, new coach on the dark web, Patricia Bradley, best-selling author of Christian fiction. Yeah. Oh, I love it. Okay, but we have the next book in that series, Fatal Witness. So let me just read the back cover copy to make sure that I get it all correct here. So, as a child artist and potter, Danny Bennett witnessed the brutal murder of her parents. What a way to start a book, okay? With no memory of the incident or her true identity, she was forced to take on a new name and a new life hidden away in Montana for the past 25 years. May Richmond has spent the same stretch of time searching for her granddaughter, who went missing the night her daughter and son-in-law were murdered, convinced the woman she saw in a Pottery magazine feature is the woman she's been searching for. She enlists the help of canine officer Mark Lassiter of Pearl Springs, Tennessee, who tracks Danny down. Skeptical but curious, Danny sets out on a journey to uncover the secrets of her past and reclaim her true identity. But someone close to her is determined to keep the truth of what happened all those years ago hidden. All right. That sounds good.
It is good, I think. I actually, when I read the last copy, I still liked it.
That's always a plus, right? You get your edits back and you're like, oh, maybe my career will still continue.
Well, and the thing is, I mean, after you've read it for umpteen times, mm-hmm. it's just hard to, to figure, you know, it's like, you know what the next word is. So it's,
right.
So I still liked it. So
that's good. That's good. Yeah. Sometimes it can be really hard to stay excited about a story you've written when it's the eighth time reading it through.
Or listening to it. Cause I always listen to it. Mm-hmm. I get to read it back to me.
Okay.
And so as I'm reading along, because that helps catch missed words.
Well, that's a good idea. Well, yeah. See, I'm learning new things today. So dark web and read your edits back to you. I like that. Okay. So tell us a little bit here. She's Danny's a child. She was a child. She's no longer a child, but she was a child victim, essentially, correct?
She was eight, and her uncle whisked her away to Montana and started a new life for him.
Okay.
But he just when she would ask, because her first memories are in Montana.
Mm-hmm.
She's 9 years old, 8 years old, and so he really doesn't want her to regain her memory, because the reason he took her away is he was afraid the killer would come after her.
After her, sure.
Has hidden her away.
All right.
But then she is a potter and an artist. And Pottery Illustrated did a feature on her, and her grandmother May, who is also a potter, got the magazine, and she thought she looked like her daughter who was murdered.
Okay.
And she goes by Danny now. She was Danielle as a child. And so the grandmother is great. She has a crime board.
I like that.
She's like 78, and she's computer savvy. And she's been, like I said, she's been looking for her for years, you know, Facebook, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes to see the sheriff who was in the first book, Alex Stone, and asks, would she send the picture of the girl in the magazine to a facial recognition to see, and gave the picture of her daughter to see. So, and it comes back that, it also, she has a picture of the child. So the points match. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was 99% chance, you know, 99% that this was her granddaughter.
Her granddaughter.
So she has the mark to call her, because she said, you know, I can just imagine somebody said, hey, I'm your grandmother, you want to call me back?
Right.
Because there's no address on her website.
Okay.
There's only a business phone, because she's been very, you know, her uncle just cautioned her.
Sure.
And he did not know about her doing the when they did the article, they weren't supposed to take a picture of her. There are no pictures anywhere on the web.
Okay.
And so, but he did. He got one picture, and that's what he made the feature.
The feature out of. And so now she's been exposed to more than just her grandmother, I'm assuming.
Right. Yes. So let's go back.
Yes.
And he has a poolie. I don't know if anyone watched the American Kennel Dog Show, but there was a poolie on there, and they look like a mop. They have curly hair.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, Mark is a canine officer. He's got a working dog.
He's got a good dog.
He makes fun of the poolie. Because, you know, he said, what is that, a mop? but the mop saves his life. So,
see, there is redemption there. I like that. Yes. That's good.
It's a complicated story, but most mm-hmm. of my stories are. I sometimes wish I could not write a complicated story.
It would be easier.
But it doesn't work out that way.
No. But yeah, I think complicated stories are, frankly, I don't know, for me, they're more fun to read.
Because
they're way less easier to predict what's going to happen. And I don't necessarily, I'm okay if I have an idea, but I don't want to be like chapter six and going, oh,
I know who did it.
This happened, and this happened. Yeah. Right.
Well, you know, and I try to leave enough clues mm-hmm. in my stories that if you're really paying attention, you can guess who the villain is. Because mm-hmm. mine are never named.
Right.
I always have a not unnamed villain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And your books don't have the villain's perspective either, correct?
They do.
Oh, they do. They do. Okay.
Yeah, they do. The one I'm working on now does. And that one, I think that one does. I have to stop it. Yeah, pretty sure it does.
So you allow the readers to get into the mind of the villain as well. Oh, yeah,
that's hard. That's one of the hardest things is to get into the mind of the villain. And I really have to, I have to understand why he's the villain, mm-hmm. you know, and it has to resonate within me of why he would do that.
Right. Right.
So, and I particularly like the villain in this one and his why he did it.
Okay. All right. Do you find yourself, and when you're writing the villain's perspective, ever feeling sorry for them or empathizing because of what's brought them to this point of villainy?
I do. Okay. I think that you almost have to mm-hmm. write a good villain.
Yeah.
Or an antagonist. I mean, they have to be well-rounded. They have, mm-hmm. they're the hero of their own story.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So you have to you have to identify with them. You have to get in their head. Right. And that's really, really hard.
Right, right. I've spent some
time. That's the hardest part.
It's got to be, yeah.
Because, yeah. I mean, you really don't want those dark thoughts
right.
in your own head. But in order, I mean, when any time I get stuck on a story, it's usually because I'm not in my character's head.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Not that like your cat. Mine was here a while ago. I have to get in my character's head.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And I've found myself, I don't know if you've done this, but they've got a lot of documentaries out now where you can watch like From the Mind of a Killer, or they do the killer interviews. And I found it's almost difficult to watch because I get creeped out or anything, maybe I should, but because I find myself almost becoming empathetic toward the killer. And I know some of that psychological manipulation from some of them.
Yeah.
But then
there are masters at manipulating.
100%. But then also when you learn about their history too, you can also see a progression of why they are the way they are.
Yeah. Well, usually a lot of times they do that one thing
mm-hmm.
and then the rest of it is cover up.
They
have to keep going.
Right.
Keep from getting caught.
Right. It's like a quicksand. There's the crime, and then there's all the other crimes that have to take place so you don't drown.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's interesting, too, because I was reading a book once about, oh my goodness, Ted Bundy. I'm not sure why I couldn't remember that. Very famous serial killer. But it was interesting to me how the author, who had actually known him personally, she did a really good job of setting up his background story. So really like the first half of the book was about a very normal individual who fit very well into society. But you also learned a lot of the abuses and heartbreaks and things that had twisted an already potentially psychotic mind into what he became. And I found myself struggling because about halfway through the book, I found myself almost cheering for him and wanting, not cheering for him and his crimes, but cheering for him in the sense of wanting him to be redeemed, because you felt this element of, oh my gosh, if he'd only had a mom that had just adored him and loved him and showed him, if he'd only had this, if he'd only seen the love of God, if he don't, you know, those are the thoughts and feelings I start having.
We used Ted Bundy. I used to teach abstinence to teenagers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we used Ted Bundy because when he was 10 years old, he found a stash of Playboy
mm-hmm.
that he, you know, and that mm-hmm. got him hooked on pornography. Of course, back then, you see more on commercials than you did in the Playboy.
Oh, right.
But, you know, and we wonder why, when you look at some of the commercials, we wonder why pornography is so rampant.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's a digression too. You know, you start at level A or whatever, and you just keep going further and further in because it eventually desensitizes you at that level.
Right. And then you want more.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
And
yeah. Head on over to YouTube where you can check out your favorite authors and yours truly as we chat up about books, about all the strange and weird subjects we like to talk about here at Mad Lit Musings. And you can even see our faces because it's video, because it's YouTube. So go check it out, Mad Lit Musings, right now. Are you still here? Go check it out. It's on YouTube. So when you're writing, I'm really curious about this whole concept of writing villains. What other things do you do to get in that frame of mind to accurately represent somebody who's potentially mentally ill, but not always? Sometimes they're just making really bad choices. So how do you get yourself into that frame of mind to write a villain's perspective?
Sometimes I have dream conversations with them.
Okay.
The one I'm working, this one in particular, I did, and I streamed what he, I can't tell too much because it will give away
right,
to it.
Right.
But if he was expected, if so much was expected of him,
okay,
that he didn't want to do, you know, it's like he couldn't do that unless he, you know, and so, it's hard to do it without, but it was fun.
I know, you don't want to do spoilers.
It was fun doing that because it was, and I have a partner, a friend who helps me that, in fact, if it had not been for her with this book, because I totally rewrote it in 6 weeks. Again, I did that with Counterattack, but this one right here that I'm on Counterattack, I totally rewrote it because I needed, I didn't like it. The villain just didn't work.
Yeah.
And I had to go back and do another villain.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah. Get to the end and I, this is not working. It's the wrong person.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I got with her and we brainstormed and she was the villain.
Okay.
And she would say things, you know.
Yeah.
Like, what he might say.
Mm-hmm.
And I would shoot a question and she would come back. And so that helped me get into his character better.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've always had trouble brainstorming with other person, but this one person I can. She's one of the people I can brainstorm with because she quickly grasps your story.
That's valuable.
So it is. And so, in fact, I'm starting a new series and I'm going to brainstorm with her this time. And I'm also reading Dwight Swain's book, The Hero's Journey.
Oh, yes.
I mean, this is Dwight Swain's take on the heroes. And there's Bick Brickman.
Okay.
I think he's very good. I'm reading that. I've been a pantser.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not working for me anymore. So I have to, I'm learning how to be a potter.
Yeah, you have to get a little bit more structure. I used to do the pantser thing a lot too. And I think when you're on tighter deadlines or life just gets super busy, you have to have a little bit more structure. So I kind of call it like we're more skeletons, I think is what we are, where we kind of like create the skeleton, but all the little stuff that goes in between the bones, I usually don't really know.
No, I don't. I'm probably, I like is the plot points and pinch points.
Yes. Yes.
If I can get those, then I have something to write to.
Right. Right. A little bit of a direction.
So that's what I will do with this new series. It's just now starting to come together in my head. Now I'm going back to Logan Point too.
Ooh.
Which is the first series.
Yes. Yes. That's exciting.
So. Story who was in the first book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Revisit all the old friends.
That's always great. I love that with books when you're reading and all of a sudden you're like, oh, I know this person. I read them years ago or however it was. Yeah. Yeah.
In 10 years.
Okay. All right. So your faithful readers will really enjoy that series.
I'm always getting emails saying, is there not, they're not going to be more Logan Point books. So I'm happy to tell them there will be.
There will be. There are more Logan Point books coming out. That's awesome.
Yeah, now I've got to read them. I've never read one of my books after
Okay. Right. No, I don't think I have either.
So I've got to get the tone, more. Those were my very first books. And so it may be a little bit different than what I'm writing now. So I have to go back. I got, first of all, figure out where it is. I got to
go back. Go into storage and pull out the old copies.
Yeah. Well, I've got the book, so I'm all.
All right. Well, there you go. There you go. Yeah, I pulled out one of my first books. Well, I pulled out The House on Foster Hill because I needed to work on some synopsis information for it. And I had totally forgotten so many of the plot threads in that book. And then I found like, wow, I almost feel like my writing style has changed and shifted. And I was like, not that it's better or worse. It's just, it's different. Yeah.
Well, I always hope that I do better with each book.
Right.
Not that the other books are bad, but
right,
you become more seasoned.
Yeah, and you kind of learn to what works and what doesn't. I was surprised with The House on Foster Hill. I was like, huh, I didn't use as much description as I use now. And then I was like, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Did I just get wordier?
I can't even do that. No, I'm a, what you call a lean writer.
Okay.
I first wrote short stories.
Okay.
Short, like 1,000 words, 1,000 to 2,500 words. My very last short story in Woman's World was 1,000 words.
Oh, I don't even know how you tell a whole story in 1,000 words.
But it was a fun thing. But I think that I learned the very first story I sent in, they asked for 2,500 and I sent 4,500.
Okay.
By rights, that editor should have, that's when you had sassies.
Okay.
And she should have stuffed that back in there and sent it back to me.
Oh.
But she liked the story and cut it. Next time they asked for 2,000, I only sent 2,500.
Well, that's not so bad.
Yeah. So, but that editor made me cut the 500. And I learned more cutting those 500 words.
I suppose.
That really, so, and that's probably why I am a very lean, what do you call, I have to go back and add more description.
Okay. All right. Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think that's a good thing though, because I think it's easier to add than it is to subtract.
I think so too. I mean, well, yeah. It's just one half dozen other probably, but right. I do, I have the skeleton that I can play.
Right.
But I usually lay down the suspense line. And on a 90,000 word, it'll come in at 75 or 80.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go back and do the romance, which adds, and also flesh out other parts.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, those are usually mine too. I get the edits back and they're like, can we have a little bit more of the relationship here? We know you're not ideally romance, but a little bit would be nice.
I know. It's much easier to kill them than it is.
It's so much easier. You and I are kindred hearts. Just kill them. Get it over with. Oh, fun. Now, one of the things I was surprised with Fatal Witness is so many of your books do take place in the South or the Southern states. And this one looks like she's been in Montana. So does it take place in Montana?
No.
Okay.
They do go to Montana for a week.
Okay.
But it takes place in up around Chattanooga.
Okay. All right.
Which is not the deep South.
No.
But they still consider themselves Southerners, I think. But anyway, this is going back to, I'm going back to the deep South.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Point, which is,
well,
in Mississippi.
Right. So
not too far from where I live.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm from Wisconsin, so Tennessee is south to us. Yeah. And then when you start saying Mississippi, we're like, where? How far south? Oh, that's fun. That's fun. So this book comes out in February. You said February 6th, correct? And I know that readers can pre-order it where all books can be pre-ordered, but also at Baker Bookhouse.
Right, 40% off.
And free shipping.
I mean, I've got that on my website, big letters.
Yeah, yeah. It's a no-brainer, too, because even when I know pre-orders are like 40% off, and then when they come out, they drop to 30% off. But even then, they're still cheaper than some of the monopolies out there that have their edge on book sales. So
And I don't trust Amazon.
Yeah.
For actually buying.
Yeah. Well, I know sometimes I've gotten what I thought was new and it wasn't new because it had like a black line through the edges or something. And those are, can't remember why they do that or how that works, but I know that that means they're.
Some have been remanded and they sell them.
That's what it was.
Less than cost.
Right. Right. And then the author doesn't get any recompense for that or commission or anything off of those. So.
Yeah. I just.
Yep.
And I don't like their Kindle sales either.
Okay.
I just don't trust Amazon.
Oops, that's fair. That's fair. I love to shop at Baker Bookhouse because every book is a present. They literally wrap it for you.
They do. And it's just nice. And
it is.
Michelle, who was my publicist, she's over it now.
I know.
That's great.
Yeah, Michelle is great. I was really excited when I found out Michelle was moving to be over the retail side of things. I'm like, oh, this is good news.
I would love to go up there. I have never been to Baker Books.
Oh, you haven't? Oh, I love it. I love it. I'm going to be back there again in March of 2024. So shortly after, I'll have to pick up your book while I'm there because I can just get it right off the shelf.
Well, I wish I've never been. I'd like to set up something.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be great. You'll have to get on their roster for their Fiction Reader Summit that they do.
All right. I'll ask
there sometime.
Anna, who took Michelle's pipe?
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be great. Well, this is always so much fun to have you on the podcast. And I love how we deviate from actually doing a lot of talk about the book and talking about strange things like chess and the dark web. And today we talked about villains and psychology and Ted Bundy. So, I mean, who knows what's going to happen next time?
Absolutely.
But thank you so much for being with us.
This was fun. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining Mad Lit Musings, where every conversation is a journey and every book is a new adventure. Subscribe now on your favorite podcast player or check us out on YouTube and let's explore the fascinating intersection of faith, society, and storytelling together.